Oh, they've used the R word again. Robust.
Robust. We see it all the time. Why are all these, you know, reports that companies come out with robust?
Robust. What impressions do you get from robust? Things are going good, could be better.
In their last quarter, 41,000. So
well, would you put that down to just luck, convenience, or this is our last quarter here? I'm going to go take that good bit, that good bit, that good bit. That's what I'd do if I was
Are they owned the asset at that point in time?
That's what I would have done. Right, Money Miners, sorry, the show has not ended. We missed yesterday. We've been on site. We're going to make it up to you. We're going to pump a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And this one's a bit late too. We've been busy. The show hasn't stopped, ladies and gents.
We've been busy, but we have not forgotten about the Money Miners, mate. We've been never thinking about them.
Never. Boys, what's going on? Trav, welcome back, big fella.
Thank you, mate.
The Money Miners missed you.
I missed them.
I reckon the views did drop a tiny bit when Trav was away. So there's
a small number that tune in for me. Yeah.
Trav effect.
The Trav effect. JD, right, let's get in. So all today we've got JD, you're doing a bit of a macro spectacular.
Oh, just a couple comments, mate.
Quite pertinent to the MinRes bond rates compared to De Grey's discount rate.
Exactly. Yes. We've also got a couple comments on Genesis and Dacian. We're going to have a little chat about Agrimen and a couple companies in suspension to be called upon.
And the nickel market.
Yeah, shit, we've got a big show.
Yeah.
Right, the sponsors for the day, the rock manual hand rock breaking people, or just Ryan O'Sullivan.
RC drillers. RC drillers.
Pretty much every LinkedIn comment now to Ryan O'Sullivan is something to do with breaking rocks with his bare hands, courtesy of Owen Birchall, actually, so most of them.
I've got a comment from watching the videos when I was away, guys, and that is
the black and white Ryan O'Sullivan video. Our videos.
This is when it comes to ripping ads. JD gave you nothing to work with. He was just like, he was just hurrying you up. Yep, right, thanks, cheers. Like, mate, you've got to give Matty a bit of freedom to have fun with
give
the ads.
Freedom.
The ads are part of the entertainment value. The listeners love them.
JD,
you've got to ask Brian questions. Let him explore the creativity with the ads.
JD loves pumping an ad, and K-Drill love pumping the fucking drill bit Matty, into the rock.
Matty knows he has center stage for the ads, and I wouldn't intrude on that.
I'll show you some highlights. I'll put together a highlight montage of you hurrying up the ad.
thanks, Smack.
Cheers, guys.
Right, okay, Drill, the RC drilling experts, Ryan O'Sullivan and his team, you'd say. He's pretty much taken K-Drill, RC drilling and just exploration drilling in general by the balls and absolutely pumping it into the ground everywhere. So hit them up if you need some holes in the ground.
They've just got some rigs spinning at Manor. I saw in the Global Lithium announcement. There's a photo of the K-Drill drill rig spinning there now. So that's pretty exciting. Good on your K-Drill.
Good on your K-Drill. Hit them up and make sure you told them it come from us, because we'll keep clipping the ticket.
Can I say thanks, K-Drill, now as well?
Ask some more prying questions.
Cheers,
K-Drill.
That'd
be a four-minute ad.
Right. Trav, back from London, and typical you went over for a holiday, but you still did shitloads of work and wheeling and dealing. You can't fucking help yourself.
I'm inspired by your commitment to business development, and I channeled that while I was in London. I did go over for a wedding. The wedding was lovely, but I managed...
I do that on work time.
Yeah. Well, I managed to squeeze in some catch-ups with some of the mining finance crowd in London, because it's got its own scene there, and it's a different scene to Perth. It's a bit more financialized, because there's commodity traders and all that sort of stuff.
Did you run in any Greatland Gold people?
I didn't. I tried to.
It'd be hard to fucking avoid them.
Yeah, I was kind of keen to do some sort of Ashes episode. I thought it was a good idea, but that'll happen one day, I'm sure. It'll be interesting thing to do. But I don't know why does Greatland Gold have such a retail crowd? It's such a mystery to me.
Any people that aren't a Greatland Gold Twitter baron, let us know, because obviously the Twitter barons will just tell you how good the project is.
They're the loudest people, the Greatland Gold crew. I mean, yeah, which is hilarious. But I learned a bit about the exchange differences as well, like between the LSE and the AIM. I wasn't sort of switched on to what type of companies were on which before. But yeah, I mean, look, I also was loud on Twitter and LinkedIn about trying to be put in touch with Michael O'Mara. He's the chief investment officer at Bell Rock Capital. That's a London hedge fund that is responsible for the activism in the Whitehaven M&A scene at the moment. I was loud about it. I was doing my best. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. I didn't get to catch up with Michael O'Mara. In fact, he didn't reply to my emails.
Did you? Who did you get to catch up with?
I caught up with Karim and Krui from La Mancha Resource Fund. Yeah. I caught up with them the day before you spoke about the SPAC deal that eventually sort of fell over, that they were involved in some way. I caught up with some of the mining private equity outfits there, Pim at Hawke's Point, David Craig and Carl at Tembo. And then there was a Mintwit drinks on a Tuesday night there, thanks to Michael Horner, who managed to get like 20-odd people down to Burlington Arms pub within about a 24-hour notice. And it's a pretty tight Mintwit community there. I don't know if they're all on Twitter, but it certainly felt like they all were. They all had their pseudonyms. The people that came, think private equity, commodity traders, punters, bankers, the likes. And it was fun. It was a lot of fun. Everyone talking, mining, stocks, news. Like it was wicked. It got me thinking. We really need to have an event here in Perth sometime soon, JD and Maddie, because it was a lot of fun.
We do, mate. I'm sure that'll be on the cards in the not too distant future.
We've got Ali GC will be bloody smashing. She'll be organising that shit for us. Come in like a bloody bullet a red flag, whatever. Yeah. The flag. Bullet a gate, that's the one.
Yeah, so let us know, Money Miners, what you would want in an event, and I reckon we'll put something together. But just, leave a comment. Tell us what sort of event do you want.
Heaps of piss. And other things. No. Righto, JD, what's going on in the macro world? You're the resident macro guru. Give us the spiel, Cobber.
Jeez, I'm not sure about any sort of guru here, Maddie, but I am fascinated. And I know we keep using that word, but I think it is the right word for this. There is so much going on, and it relates to our world. It relates to commodities. You've seen all this stuff about the US government, commodity prices, China, is it not growing, the property market, bond yields, currencies. And it all sort of takes its toll. So I'll just touch on a couple points which really relate to a lot of the mining companies we speak about, Maddie. So we've got the Aussie dollar getting beaten up. It's just hit 11-month lows. So one Aussie buck buys you 63 US cents now, or in the reverse, one US dollar buying you a buck 59 Aussie. So what that essentially actually means for the mining companies, like the ones we've been to in the pretty recent past, Maddie, is buying equipment and those sorts of things that are priced in US dollars gets harder because you're paying more Aussie dollars, essentially. Not too complicated, but you can get a slight cushion on the revenue because a lot of commodities are priced in US dollars. So you're getting a bit more dollars at the, on the top line for the commodities you're selling.
And mills would fall under that category for equipment, JD, buying mills from overseas?
They would. They're not really made in Australia, so they're going to be priced in US dollars generally. Yep. So for those big CapEx bills up front. And then there was a quick comment I wanted to make on bond yields, and this relates to what you mentioned with regard to MinRes, Maddie. The one-year Treasury bill in America is giving you 5.5%, the 20-year, 5.2%. So these are the rates. The US Treasuries is what you've always called risk-free in finance 101. And we saw MinRes price their US $1.1 billion bond offering last week at 9.25%. So that had a four-year duration on it. So it just makes me think. We see projects, companies doing studies at a 5% discount rate, a 6.5% discount rate, are two very recent examples that we've gone at length into. Companies just can't do this anymore. It's not 2020. The long-term US treasuries aren't yielding 1%. It doesn't make any sense to discount the risk of a mining project at 5%. So I'm sure we're going to see companies, I hope to see companies, change that in the future.
So let's just summarise it, JD. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because if I need to understand it, some of the underground miners listening will need to understand it as well. So, look, the MinRes bond, that's effectively the cheapest way they could get a $1.1 billion was at a 9.25% interest rate, effectively. And they're a bigger, lower risk company than giving it to a small cap.
Exactly.
So they should get a better interest rate than someone like that's a $100 million market cap getting a loan.
Yeah, they've got a very different risk profile to a single asset mining company. They've got multiple streams of cash flow. They've got mining services, they've got lithium, they've got iron ore and all that.
It's lower risk to the lender.
Essentially. And we're talking about debt there, which is also lower risk than equity, and your discount rate is a mixture of debt and equity on how you plan to fund the project.
Right.
So,
okay, and so we talked about De Grey, how they did their DFS based on a 5% discount rate.
Was it 5?
Yeah, yep. It was 5. Yep.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, you've been on holidays, mate. Don't you worry about us. We're all over this shit. So they did it on a 5% discount rate. So effectively, the discount rate for a medium to higher risk project should not be lower than, say, the interest rate that a lower risk company can get their loan for. Is that a bit of a rule of thumb?
I think in general, yes. There'd be like differences in, you know, security. Like, I'm not sure if those bonds were secured bonds.
They were unsecured.
So like, yeah, there's different assurances to lenders for, yeah, you know, what's being provided as security. But in general, 100% yes.
That is, yeah, absolutely.
So that MinRes interest rate now is an indication of where the global economy is at for money and lending.
Yeah, it's just a super pertinent example to the companies we speak about.
Yeah. So a small cap discount rate should be higher than 9.25%.
Exactly, mate. That's it.
Well, even DeGray aren't a small cap. They're a bloody big cap. But right, Genesis. We've got a bit of info on how the Gwalia mine is progressing.
Yeah, the famous Gwalia saga,
they've used the R word again. Robust.
Do you guys know, Trav, do you know why? Robust. We see it all the time. Why are all these, you know, reports that companies come out with robust?
Is it the same IR firm doing the thing? And I think it is, actually.
Well, you've got to, like, there's only a limited set of superlatives you can use to describe performance. And robust, what impressions do you get from robust? Things are going good, could be better.
Robust, but good, but just solid as a rock. Solid.
Well, I read today some drill results were encouraging. So yeah. That didn't fill me with confidence.
Encouraging is not as good as robust on the spectrum. No. Exceptional is the one but that, you know,
exceptional and outstanding.
But I do love being told what to think about something before you have the ability to form your own opinion.
100%. Right, so what is the own opinion? RAL's first quarter at Gwalia under the after the St. Barbara era, now the Genesis era.
That's it, mate. So they produced 34,000 ounces. So for a bit of comparison, what St. Barb's had done in the previous four quarters in chronological order was 34,000, 32,000, 31,000, and in their last quarter, 41,000.
So, well, would you put that down to just luck, convenience, or this is our last quarter here, I'm going to go take that good bit, that good bit, that good bit. That's what I'd do if I was
they owned the asset at that point in time.
That's what I would have done. I don't know if that actually happened, but
convenient, yeah, how it all just lined up for them,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, yeah, unless they just really hit a high-grade patch.
So Genesis were pretty subtle in calling this out. They called the actual recent run rate at 120 to 130,000 ounces.
Per annum.
Per annum, that's right. Yeah. So they've been building stockpiles at Admiral. Admiral sits 40 km to the south of Leonora. That's one of the original GMD assets. They got $135 million in cash and bullion after the transaction costs. That was $35 million transaction costs to be paid out. They've got no hedging in place. They had cash build of $14 million, so that's a pretty good sign, you know, that the assets are making money. Because you compare that with St. Barbara. Now, we don't have any indication of what costs were just yet from Genesis, but the St. Barbara all-in sustaining cost for FY22 at the Leonora assets was $17.17 in Aussie dollars, and for FY23 it was $25.21. Yep. So essentially Genesis have to see improvements on that or they're not going to make money, and the acquisition price is not going to be worth it. They need to see improvements there.
I think the bit of toll treating that's happening here is going to help them along a bit for mill cost per ton. So you got Bellevue that have been toll treating. Yeah. I think that's finished now. Bright Star's going to kick off. I'm not sure if that's there yet. I don't think it's there yet.
Right. Yeah.
But that's, I think, they're going to be doing it in January, I think. So okay. I think that obviously the toll treating's revenue, like it might be, you know, $50 a ton or something like that, but improving the unit cost of that mill.
Yeah, yeah. So if you look at what St. Barbara were actually mining, they were only mining enough ore to fill the mill 50%, so nowhere near enough. And then if you add in the stockpiles and the third party ore that they were getting, they were running the mill at 70%. So it's a 1.4 million tonne per annum capacity mill, just by the way. So, yeah, they'll be trying to fill that up. And then, you know, hopefully in RAL's case in the not too distant future, they can finally bed down the Dacian takeover and have a bit more come in their way and maybe decide what they do with Mount Morgans in the future.
Yeah. From my memory, they were talking about releasing a mine plan or a new sort of strategic plan for the Gwalia operations in the last quarter of this year.
Yeah, and they did mention in the next 6 months, so I think in the March quarter, they want to release a five-year plan, and I'm sure that'll be stacked with plenty of info.
Gotcha.
And, yeah, I'll be Well, you caught me early there. I'll be interested. I'll be interested to see how the new management team has performed there. I'll be looking at and it's all like we've seen the answers. You want to see the cost. Yep. They've made money, but consistently they're getting deeper. And look and what I've heard a lot of because the hardest thing at Gwalia, it's that 40-degree dipping ore body. So the hardest thing's to pull the footwall and get all the gold out and managing the seismicity. And, you know, from what I heard, a lot of standards required to ensure a lot of this stuff happens effectively sort of fell by the wayside over the years to, you know, maximise the chance of getting all the gold out at the best rate possible. Look, we saw stope underperformance from St Barbara, which is, you know, whether I'm not sure if that was not pulling the footwall or not getting all the gold out. Be interested to see if they are. Genesis are going to be a bit more consistent on the production and the performance.
I don't think we'll be able to assess performance after the first quarter.
Yeah, no,
I
mean, it'll be like a year.
We're the market and we're impatient, so we're going to look at it and talk about it. But it's going to take a while before we're able to look back and be like...
Looking at that, like if they've they've pretty much exceeded guidance for the quarterly rate, it's obviously not a bad... Not a bad effort. Have we got that right? 134,000 ounces. That's 136,000 ounces a year. They got it to 120, 130. So it looks like they've hit the ground running. But
we'll see what Genesis Mining Services can pull off.
See, Genesis, like we never say anything good about you. Far out. Yeah.
And on Genesis, we're going to talk a bit about Dacian. So Genesis, of course,
is going on here?
So Genesis own 80.1%. They've owned that for a while now, of Dacian. So... It means Dacian's still an independent company, but it means that, you know, decision making from the Dacian point of view needs to treat all shareholders equally. So there was something I noticed on today's announcement. There's only three pages, and on page two there was a figure, and that figure looked pretty familiar to me, Matty. That is a Dacian figure. They've just pulled the exact same picture from a Dacian presentation and chucked it. From a Genesis presentation, chucked it in the Dacian one. So not even a color change or anything.
Well, So technically they could have used 80% of the picture because Genesis own 80% of it.
Maybe they could have made
it. You can copy 80% of it.
Maybe sharing resources in...
Synergies, eh? So what the announcement actually said was that Dacian have received consent from a couple of different departments to mine at Redcliffe. So Redcliffe has a reserve of 141,000 ounces at 2.7 grams per tonne, so a small... project.
That was the not the Redcliffe Tavern, bloody fly-in pub at the airport
This is where Dacian merged with NTM. Joy. Do you remember that one?
I do.
Yeah, so this was NTM's.
So they've got a couple of things that still need to be wrapped up. They're looking at processing and infrastructure and planning. It's interesting they discuss Dacian discusses Mount Morgans as the processing option. It just doesn't make sense. Mount Morgans is on care and maintenance at the moment. Redcliffe sits much closer to Gwalia, so I think they're just going to bide their time with this one until they can complete the acquisition and send the dirt to Gwalia, unless they decide to do it prior with a sort of toll treating agreement. Right. That would make a whole lot more sense.
I see. So the fact that they don't own 100% of Dacian makes, you know, where you send the Redcliffe ore actually a bit of a tricky thing because if they send it to Gwalia, it benefits Genesis as a shareholder more than it benefits the other 20%.
They can't be seen to be doing that, right? So they need to weigh up what's actually best for all shareholders of Dacian.
So when are they going to own Dacian?
Well, Delphi are 10.6% shareholders, so there's a few other shareholders in there as well. That's been going on a while.
How are they going to get them over the line? What are we going to have to see? What's going to be the catalyst?
You need a takeover offer for the minority shareholders to agree to.
So they've got to put in a big offer to take Kin, and Delphi agrees to it.
Both of them.
Money normally does the job.
Both of them are going to have to agree to terms. Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we chat a bit about nickel, guys?
Go on, we could have gone deeper there. Travis, do you know something?
No, I don't. I genuinely don't. But yeah.
In Money Miners, Trav's done a bit of bloody YouTube research. We're trying a new lighting system now. We've turned the top ones off. It's a bit more, got a bit of a warmer feel to it. We've got to get more of them fucking orange lights and sex it up a bit.
But moody. I want to see Maddie's bar behind you, something like that.
Yeah, Maddie's bar. I'll just sit at the bar sinking piss the whole time and just do it from there. That'd be the go. That'd have to be short episodes. I'll be fuck off by the end of it. Righto. Nickel, the underloved commodity in the last couple of months for Money of Mine. It hasn't been getting a much of a mention, especially I went all the work to do that nickel spectacular and haven't even been able to re-quote it yet. IGO, Nickel Conference Prezi.
That's it, mate. So
what's going on?
IGO, a bit more of a lithium company now, but they've still got a couple nickel assets. Obviously, they've been written down and not looking too well.
They've got a lot more nickel assets, but they just make more money out of the lithium.
Much more.
Written fucking down.
That's right, mate. So people have been pretty bearish, like you said, on nickel the last year or so, a bit less than a year. A
few years, I think.
Yeah, so it started to really catch on. Now it seems like everyone's pretty bearish on nickel, and it's largely been a result of all this supply coming out of Indonesia, and it's reflected in the deck from IGO. So you can see in the chart that they show oversupply until about 2028, and then like every mining company ever, they show a supply deficit, and then the price just goes exponential from there.
Mate, I would love to pry into the assumptions behind that emerging deficit they show.
Yeah.
I mean, what I suspect you'd find in those assumptions are some lofty assumptions about EV adoption and nickel penetration within those EV batteries that are required. You know, but the data that, like, you know, we're seeing from the EV adoption in China is LFPs, which don't need nickel in the battery chemistry, are emerging as the dominant battery chemistry in the EVs. Like Tesla just announced that the LFPs are going to be used in Model 3s. So I'd love to see the assumptions behind that.
I reckon the assumption might be as simple. Was it every other fucker's on their prezo saying there's a supply gap? So I'm just going to keep with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of twofold, isn't it? You need to firstly be banking on the EV adoption, and then as well that your battery chemistry is going to be the one. And NCM is obviously the one targeted, a more premium, longer range battery. But like you say, Trav, the LFP has been winning market share very quickly around the world. So the second chart that we'll show from IGO shows how quickly the supply from Indonesia has been scaling up. And it's just incredible. It's not just one behemoth of a project coming online. It's many projects. They're coming online quickly. And where it's really underlined is you can see in 2015, 2% of the global supply came from Indonesia. By 2023, this year, 45% of nickel supply is coming from Indonesia. That's just astounding to do it.
And it's astounding when you look at the graph of how quick that has happened. Like, everything used to come out of Australia, like not long ago.
Yeah.
A lot of it used to come out of Australia.
Yeah, that's an eight-year period.
The ramp-up period for Indonesia and Philippines is unbelievable.
Yeah, and that supply, that's the laterite reserves being produced from these HPAL operations, which have become a lot more cost-efficient and fast to produce and capital efficient versus in the past. And they pump out this nickel pig iron. Earlier this year, we saw that nickel pig iron price trade at the largest relative discount to LME nickel, and that discount, relatively large discount, created an incentive for that to be converted into class one. Hence, because of this laterite supply coming online, it brings the whole nickel market price down, because you end up supplying to all categories via the conversion process.
Yeah,
and I think for the money miners that want just a quick sum up of what this means, like the nickel laterite out of, which is predominantly where all the nickel is harder to process. It requires this high pressure acid leaching. It was notoriously used for nickel pig iron, which was put into stainless steel, which was pretty much 70% of the use of global nickel. But now there's technology out there to actually convert that using these HPALs to convert it into nickel matte and then use it for batteries.
Is it the HPAL that converts it, or is it PKF?
There's another
step after
that. Nickel short guy, I think their company developed the technique. But notoriously, the nickel sulfides in Australia and around the world would be the product to use. That's your class one. But now they can actually use the shitter nickel that's harder work, but there's shitloads more of it to go into the batteries.
Yeah, so they convert from that lower purity nickel, which is generally, a 99.8% into a much more pure product, which can be used in your batteries and the like. So that's the real change. And nickel has really stood out amongst other commodities, right? Because we're talking about all these other projects struggling to come online. You've seen it in copper, in lithium and everything. But the way the supply across, not just Indonesia now, but the whole commodity is scaling up its supply, which is a bit of an outlier. And just one more comment on the pricing, guys. Trav, you touched on a discount between LME pricing and the nickel pig iron pricing. And that's pretty huge. Like the pricing you see when you just search online is most commonly going to be the LME price, but that is not necessarily what the companies are receiving. And we spoke with the Wyloo guys a couple months back, and there was a really interesting chat, and they talked about this bifurcation in nickel prices and bifurcation in commodity prices already being evident in payabilities. And that's what you're receiving from the smelter that you sell the thing to, and it's sort of quoted on a percentage of the benchmark. So the Kambalda assets frequently had around 75% payabilities. So it'd be interesting to see how that plays out in the future, whether it is like the Wyloo guys say, those bifurcation in price.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. And looking at that IGO presentation today, JD, had me just reflect on IGO as a company a bit. And of course, IGO, they're going to talk a lot about the nickel opportunities. As you said, Matty, they've got a lot of nickel assets and opportunities. But I look at their portfolio, and 85% of the NAV, so the value of their portfolio, is coming from the lithium, not nickel.
Is that a consensus?
Based on my
and that's just a 24-point whatever percent of green bushes.
Yeah, because I've seen even higher.
And the downstream.
Yeah. I've seen well over 90% on some other independents.
Yeah, totally. And I believe that, right? And you're right, Matty, 24.99% of green bushes is the source of so much of that value. Of course, they've got the Kwinana plant as well, but
that's not a big money spinning.
The vast majority of it is coming from Greenbushes, and I couldn't help but think, okay, so a huge amount of the value of this company is all coming from a non-operating minority interest in a great asset. I couldn't help but think of the analogy to Gold Road in some ways, you know. It's a bit of a financial vehicle in some ways, as opposed to they are an operator, and of course they operate Novo, and they've got the other nickel stuff there too. But from the value perspective, it's like it's a financial vehicle from the actual value of the company.
Imagine if they didn't buy it and they held on to Tropicana or took over Panoramic, and imagine if they did not have Greenbushes right now.
Yeah, it'd be a more precarious situation. Yeah. Mm.
So do you think they're going to have to look to move on something in the nearer future? Nova's getting near the end of its life. They've written down all the Western area's assets. Odysseus is...
There's no pressure to it all, I reckon. Like, you've got all that cash coming from Greenbushes. You don't need to rush into buying anything. Like, they are such marginal on the scale of the business now. Like,
as a brand, but...
I think you're right, their brand was like, you know, create value via M&A. I think their new CEO starts at the tail end of this year.
Yeah, December.
And, I mean, like, they're going to get their hands into it a bit first before, I imagine, you know, they really pull the trigger on another sort of M&A opportunity. I'd love to see them, ramp up the distribution of their profits to shareholders. They've got some guidance around distributions, but I'd love to see that ramp up while the times are good. And if you're putting a pause on M&A, then let shareholders have some of it.
Yeah, and being good at M&A doesn't mean jumping at the first deal you get, so it could be a while before they sink into that.
Righto, we've had a deal termination. Agrimen terminate the deal to buy Calium. Trav, JD's been running the fort for industrial minerals sector while you've been away. Done a fucking great job too by JD. I'm glad you did it, because I just wouldn't have even mentioned it.
I was a bit offended.
What's going on?
Mate, I was pretty offended. We of course went to site, and Mr. Bramwell gave us some awards, some funny awards, and he gave JD an award for his interest in industrial minerals. Mate, that's mine.
But what did he give you? What was your one?
I think it was like a media award.
I reckon he got him around the wrong way.
Yeah, he cooked it.
Nah, he wouldn't have made it. He did call us Mines of Money at the start, so we had to do a retake there. Anyway, we got that.
We can swap trophies, mate.
We got the potty in the pit coming out later in the week. That was a bloody ripper. First, I reckon that is the first ever podcast that has ever been conducted inside an open pit.
Yeah, it was wicked.
It was bloody good fun.
Speaking of things I'm excited about.
Agrimen and Calium.
Yeah, so the news is out that Agrimen have terminated their share sale agreement to acquire Calium. Recall, Calium Lakes were suspended pending, like they were in a lot of trouble. Their balance sheet was awful. And this was, they'd appointed administrators and this was the solution, Agrimen doing a deal. Agrimen, they've also been in suspension for a little while pending a capital raise. No terms were ever released about that capital raise. And I think the read through here is that getting the funding actually appeared to have been an issue because they went into suspension to raise it. Didn't happen. Agrimen only had a touch over $2 million cash themselves as of about early July. So I think they still would be looking to top that up on a smaller scale now that Calium's off the cards. But I think the big question is what happens now and where does this leave the potash, specifically West Australian SOP industry? I'm skeptical that there are other realistic buyers for Calium left out there. I mean, we can look at the microcap juniors that are in the space. Trig Mining, they just pivoted to bloody gold and copper with a project acquisition a month ago in Queensland. They were previously trying to develop their own project. Australian Potash, so APC, they conducted a strategic review for their Lake Wales project.
I hate that phrase.
Yeah, strategic review.
That's never a good one.
Yeah, especially, mate, they couldn't find a buyer in this one. Ended up selling their camp for about $1 million. Went into trading halt to raise money on the 28th of September. They haven't come out. They've been suspended from ASX for not lodging their financial year report on time. So some question marks there. Reward Minerals is another one. It's a Mick Rowani company. I doubt it that they'll be interested. We can look at others that might, have some potential interest. So you've got the Czech Group, Seven, who they acquired SO4 out of administration, Salt Lake Potash. I imagine their hands are more than full getting across the plethora of technical challenges that exist at that asset. BCI Minerals, remember me talking about those ones. So BCI actually, they've got their hands full with Biondi, which still has its own giant funding issue that's unresolved despite partial construction, and that's the salt and SOP project that has been revised to remove the SOP plant. So it's basically a salt project in its first incarnation to begin with.
Right, who else have you got, Trav? Who else is in the mix?
So there's BCI Minerals. Remember, I've talked about them before. I think they've got their hands full with their Mardy salt project, which still has its own giant funding issue. I think they've got a pretty big funding gap and that's unresolved despite the fact that it's partially constructed itself. Another one I'll throw in the mix there is maybe Calium's offtaker, K&S. So K&S, they're a German fertilizer outfit. They've notably also been trying to advance a salt project in Ashburton for years, which has been held up by environmental approvals, and CapEx keeps going up. Maybe, but I'm still a bit skeptical there. But on the topic of salt projects in WA too, it's worth mentioning that it looks like Rio via, their Dampier Salt company, which they're the majority owner of, are selling off one of their salt projects. So this is Lake McLeod, about 50 kilometres north of Carnarvon. We see some media reporting about that potentially being up for grabs too.
Oh, mate, Jesus, fucking good to have him back, eh, JD? Buddy, mate, you did a good job. That was pretty good.
Flying through the salt lake.
I've got one more takeaway, just reflecting on Calium, and we spoke about the London private equity groups focused on mining there, and I caught up with a couple of them. One I didn't catch up with is a group called Greenstone Resources. They were the cornerstone investor in Calium. Rumours are that they're closing up their office after, their returns have been dreadful. Greenstone had a horror run. So Calium is in the mix, probably hurt the most, but they were also a cornerstone to Heron, the previous owners.
Woodlawn Heron.
Yeah.
God.
Which went broke. Also Metro Mining, so bauxite in Queensland, that stock price has fallen 90% from its highs. It's sad news for Greenstone, but private equity groups that kind of get involved in project finance.
Especially project finance in and around
niche
COVID.
Niche commodities. It's tricky.
Because COVID was the, Heron had its issues, but COVID was a big driver of it as well, and you just can't predict that. So
yeah.
Now, boys, these suspensions you mentioned at the end of the show, what's going on here? Couple.
Got a couple to talk about. So we've spoken about Magnus in the past, MNS, and they are suspended from quotation. So the quote from the ASX was, Maddie, MNS did not lodge its full year statutory accounts by the due date. So
are they the graphite mob?
Oh, there's graphite. There's a battery.
Battery
plan.
Technology.
There's like, you know, forecast revenues that never eventuated. There's ASIC investigations. There's, you know, ASIC watch lists. There's plethora of really alarming stuff about this company.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so
chuck them on the watch list. Though.
Things aren't looking good there. They had a $72.7 million net loss. They've got total assets of a bit over $203 million and total liabilities of about $205 million. So
Jesus.
They've got negative net assets, you know, negative equity, which is never a great or financially strong position to be in, Maddie.
Well, we've talked about that, the troubled history, in a previous episode, and that history appears to have come to an end. Mondi on Twitter summarizes it well, saying in late 2021, Magnus estimated IM3NY revenues of $80 million in 2022 and $360 million in 2023. In reality, Magnus just posted a $72.7 million loss, negative equity, and ASX have extended their suspension due to concerns regarding the qualified audit opinion.
What's IM3NY?
That was the name of their battery plant in the US.
Ah, right.
Yeah,
right. Leo, lithium as well, boys. Well,
we've spoken about Leo quite a bit, and now they're, you know, unfortunately for shareholders, in another suspension.
Yeah, and they dropped it late yesterday. The quote on the ASX announcement, you know, piqued my interest. It says, the securities will be suspended from quotation immediately under Listing Rule 17.3 following a failure to respond to ASX queries adequately. The securities will remain suspended until the company has responded to ASX's queries adequately.
Geez, Leo Lithium are like one of those bad boy rugby league players that just fucking head highs everyone all the time and they're just always suspended and they're never playing.
That's exactly what I was thinking, Maddie.
a bit similar. Yes.
Awesome work, guys.
Plenty to come out. Beauty. Good to have you back, Trav. Thanks for
–
we wanted you to have a day off because you're completely fucked at the moment. Tired and run down. But, like, mate, Trav will push through the pain and get pneumonias for the money miners.
Like you said, mate.
On your record, didn't you?
Money doesn't sleep.
Money doesn't sleep. Oh, thanks to all the partners, as always. Our great friends at the top of the show at K-Drill. Also got Terra Capital, Anytime, Exploration Services.
JP Search.
And SMEC Power and Technology. Geez, SMEC got a good run up at bloody the Westgold trip,
sure
didn't
did.
They? Geez, they'll be up in the invoice next month, Marty. We looked after you. Don't you worry about that.
Thanks for the support, guys.
Good on you.
Hoodaroo,
money miners.
Hoodaroo.
The information contained in this episode of Money of Mine is of general nature only and does not take into account the objectives, financial situation, or needs of any particular person. Before making any investment decision, you should consult with your financial advisor and consider how appropriate the advice is to your objectives, financial situation, and needs.